John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, the NFL continues to pick up with plenty of stuff that's going on, and of course, we'll keep you up to date on that. But the most latest now is that the San Francisco 49ers lost a defensive tackle, DJ Reed, to the season-ending like a pec injury. And so guess who they're working out, Curtis? Two former Seahawks.
Yeah, and one of them is, what, Ziggy Ansah?
Ziggy Ansah and Deion Jordan. Looking to see where they're going to get the replacement. I mean, Ziggy obviously has to be coming in for a lot less money. But I know that the first team that expressed interest in him, because I saw it happen at the owners' meeting, you know, was the San Francisco 49ers, but the offer just wasn't satisfactory. But it looks like there could be a former Seahawk that could be joining the 49ers in the next day or two. In fact, as we speak, Ziggy Ansah is getting COVID testing, and maybe there's a chance that something can get done.
Yeah, I would imagine a player doesn't go through the COVID testing if a team isn't serious about signing them. So, we all know what Ziggy Ansah did here last year, yeah. Should I say it wasn't much. Maybe he'll have a resurrection of his career. A little salt to throw on that rivalry between the Seahawks and 49ers, I would imagine.
Well, the thing is, that's the great part about, and we watched that with Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll, where it was kind of an arms race when Harbaugh was there. It's like, okay, Seattle did something. They trade for Jamal Adams, and so now they've got to do something in return, and we'll see where it goes. Again, Ziggy was a disappointment at $9 million last year, but he'll be healthier because it's not coming off the shoulder surgery that he had. But let's get into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
One of the things, you can look at, you could see him be all fiery and interpret that like he's being selfish or like he's being, overly outgoing or whatever. Come on. This guy loves what he does, and he cares so much that the passion just explodes out of him at times, which is exactly what you've seen in players that we've had in our program for years. So to have a chance to add that to our team, forget all the playmaking stuff. It's that element of mentality that I'd love to add so that Bobby gets to play with a guy like that, and then Jay Reed gets to play with a guy like that, and Bruce, and they'll all feed off of each other because we all love to be that way. That's the way we love about this game, is cutting it loose and letting it go and getting to that primal mentality that this game allows.
So Pete Carroll very excited about Jamal Adams, had a Zoom press conference yesterday at 1:30 and had the conversation of what the not just the talent of Adams, because you're talking about a legitimate top six pick in a draft. And sometimes you go back to 2013, you go back to even 2016 or so. Some of the ones, even some years they don't have it. The guys up top may not be as good. Well, this guy is legitimate. And then I think what Pete's trying to express, which I think everything I've heard about him, and I remember interviewing him last year, is that he really is intent on football. He's always trying to get better. He is a guy that is a good leader, and I think he'll fit in perfectly here, particularly knowing that Quandre Diggs is going to be the free safety, and you got Wagner, you got KJ Wright, you got good cornerbacks and all that stuff. So I think it's going to be a great fit, and Adams is going to make the thing so much better. And what you look at is that somebody, I think, Dave Wyman brought this up yesterday, and we both came to the same conclusion. What he reminds you of, if you remember, in the Indianapolis Colts, they had a second-round safety named Bob Sanders, who actually was a defensive player of the year type, but he didn't have a big body, so his career wasn't as long. Well, Jamal Adams got a big enough body that he should be fine. I know he's been clocked it sometimes under 4.4. In his 40-yard dash, even though I think he did a 4.58 at the combine. But what you're looking for is a great player, but also a great guy to add to this locker room and to this team.
Number two.
This, again, it's not in our hands. Josh did a really good job with us last year. He fit in really well. He was part of this team, and by the way, we opened and embraced his coming to us, but also by the way he attacked it. So we are very open to that thought, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen on that.
So Pete Carroll talking about Josh Gordon, also talking about Antonio Brown, and I don't know. It seems to me that Gordon is the better choice of the two. More problems for Antonio Brown. Today, a judge ruled via email more than anything else, on his case where he trashed a luxury condo room and what he ended up doing is that, I mean, he did so much damage to it. And basically the judge says that everything you tried to do was to delay the case, cause problems in the case. And so it's another ruling against Antonio Brown. Now, remember, he's undergone another lawsuit against him. It could even be more serious and extend his 8-game suspension in the sense that he has a female trainer who's, you know, claiming he, you know, sexually did things to her that she did not like. And so that case is still there, and it found the NFL can just basically take the position. It's like they may extend it past 8 because they, you know, took it to 8, you know, with the assault that he had on the moving van driver, that he had 2 charges that he pleaded guilty to, and also the lawsuit by an artist that he, you know, sent bad text messages to. So in the end, I think I just really question whether it's wise to do anything with certainly Antonio Brown. But Josh Gordon, still waiting to see if he can get reinstated. If he can, you can pretty well see he's going to be a Seahawk.
Number 3.
Clowney standing up on the left side of the Seahawks defense. Roethlisberger steps up, gets hit again, and he goes down. Jackson is there to get him. Brandon Jackson from right here in Pittsburgh makes the big play along with his other buddy Quentin Jefferson, also from Pittsburgh. They let Big Ben know they are not going away. 3 and out to start the game for the Pittsburgh offense.
So Brandon Jackson, who was cut about a week ago, ends up re-signing, and he's from McKeesport, PA. And, of course, unfortunately, don't have Quentin Jefferson, who went to my high school here, but he's with Buffalo. But Brandon Jackson signs a 1-year deal. And basically what happened is that, you know, he had the restricted tag, and so he was at $2.133 million, which was going to be too much. And so he probably came back for $825,000 on a 1-year deal. That put the Seahawks roster at 79. And my guess would be the next guy to sign is going to be Joey Hunt. You know, Joey Hunt was at the same boat. He was at $2.133 million, and so now he'll probably come back at $825,000. He's been out there a week, not having anybody to sign with. So in the end, I think Hunt's going to be back, and all of a sudden that depth continues to be good. We'll see what other moves John Snyder has up his sleeve.
Number 4.
I just spoke to Cassidy Woods, and he said that he and a teammate were, in his words, cut and dismissed from the team over all of this. So his understanding was that he could opt out of games but still participate in all the workouts with the team, all the training up until that point, and be affiliated with this unity group. You know, Washington State's position is that once you inform us that you're opting out, you can't be in the locker room. You can't be around others, even, you know, for those same health and safety concerns. So, but like Cassie Woods, you're still pretty upset about the situation, said that Nick Rolovich, he spoke to him even a few weeks ago about this group, and then obviously the tone changed after that conversation on Saturday.
So Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com talking about the crazy situation with Cassidy Woods, the wide receiver, and, you know, Nick Rolovich trying to get the confusion over, you know, did he kick him off the team or what happened, because Woods is involved in trying to, you know, see if they can get 50% of the revenue from the Pac-12 and also get some better protocols going as far as safety and, you know, all kind of different insurance things on the We Are United group. But I think that, you know, he did inform the team that he is going to opt out and not play in games. And if that's the case, you can understand that Rolovich wasn't kicking him out. He's did that. So we'll see if there's going to be any change, but kind of an ugly situation there. And we'll see how the Pac-12 goes in their conference call to see, you know, where it goes with the We Are United group. But again, you kind of get the feeling that they're not going to probably do too much, because again, you know, they're asking for a lot. And I think the unreasonable thing is saying, oh, we want 50% of the revenue. It's like, oh, wait a second here. How can you do that? The revenue is going to be down so much. And it's like, now you got to pay your players 50%. Don't see it happen.
Number 5.
Here's the pitch, swung on, fly ball, shallow left field. Racing over to his left is Marmoleos, and it's going to drop in for a base hit. Machine rounding third, he will score. Down to second goes Canna on a base hit by Matt Olson. And the A's get another run. They now lead by a score of 11-1.
Yeah, so Justin Sheffield did great for 4 innings and then had a shutout going, and then all of a sudden things blew up. He gave up 4 runs. Brian Smith, the veteran relief pitcher who they brought at the beginning of the season, gets racked again. So all of a sudden, here's the A's. They get 8 runs in the 5th inning and basically get an 11-1 runaway. And so 8 of those runs came with 2 outs in the 5th inning and 4 off of Sheffield, and he had to take credit for that. The bullpen continues to be a, I guess, a predictable disappointment, but again, I think you can kind of see where it goes. So That ends the series. The A's win 3 out of 4, and so the Mariners continue along now at 4-7. They have the Angels coming to T-Mobile Park tonight for a 3-game series. That game is going to start at 7:10. You got a 6 o'clock pregame show that you can hear right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. You can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to go under further reviews and talk about some breakout players for the Seahawks in 2020. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, you know, the one thing is that breakout players are somebody that you go, and I know Pete Carroll always talks about the idea that, you know, where you start to figure some guys out is that how they go from year one to year two, and then from year two to year three, and that's the way it's been, and particularly with the advancements on the defensive guys in this team. And so how that's going to work is going to be interesting to follow, because again, this team still has good youth and guys that are going to step up. But Brock Huert was on with Danny and Gallant today, and he wanted to talk about what he thinks are going to be some of the breakout players for this Seattle Seahawks team.
Chris Carson was the breakout player for the Seahawks in 2018. DK Metcalf was that dude in 2019. Who's your breakout player this year?
Can it be Will Disley in year three? Is that still fair, or has he passed his rookie standards in baseball terms?
Yeah, give me Will Disley. You know what that dude can do? That dude can rehab. That dude is a monster at rehab. And I'm serious, like that's not a backhanded compliment or anything. Like, that's not easy for guys. Maybe Luke Wilson gave him some of his Wolverine blood that allows him to heal so quickly. Something's going on there.
Danny, when you're Billy Bozeman and you're underage balding and you've got very little else to do, you're going to train every single day.
Leave this hairline alone.
That's exactly what he did, okay? Billy Bozeman, according to Pete Carroll, did not miss a single day of rehab the entire 8 months. And I fully believe that. And we watched him the year before coming off of his patella injury, which, as we know from Jimmy Graham and others, is a horrendous injury. And I said last year, watching him in training camp, I even asked him personally, I'm like, dude, you look like you got more bounce than you had the year before, which is not supposed to happen with that injury. And then obviously he pops the Achilles, and I don't think there'll be any question that if I was walking behind him, or Paul was walking behind him, or Danny or Lydia or Jess, maybe you guys wouldn't be as weird as Paul and I and actually look at his calves and study them, which is the first tell on a torn Achilles of like, ooh, yeah, that's that imbalance. That's not good. And then that leads to hamstring issues and other issues and everything else. But you can tell actually by looking at a guy's calves, just, you know, how balanced they are, how healed they are from that Achilles. And obviously to pass his physical, this guy worked his butt off. He has been phenomenal with every little slice of the pie he's gotten to this point. It's only been because the pie has been smashing his face with injury over 2 years that he's not been that breakout guy. But I think with Greg Olsen, I think with Luke Wilson, I think with Hollister, I think with all those other guys playing a role and playing opposite him, he's going to get ample opportunity to be an absolute stud this year.
Yeah, so Disley certainly is going to be the candidate. And, of course, the good news yesterday was that coming off the Achilles, he passed his physical, and it's not starting at least the preseason on the PUP list of physically unable to perform. So he's ready to go. And, of course, you know, the first 3 weeks now are going to be just training and getting ready for the 17th, because that 17th is going to be the first padded practice. But I think you can see that he would be a candidate. I would nominate L.J. Collier, because L.J. Collier probably didn't play as much as he should last year. And part of that was because, you know, he had the ankle injury. And I think that there's one point early in the season, they were thinking that maybe he was going to be done for the year. He wasn't done for the year, but he still, I think you're going to see a big advancement in him, because, you know, he's good. I mean, I think that, you know, I know he's dedicated. He's certainly, you know, got a lot of momentum going right now, as far as, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder. And the chip in his shoulder is certainly one that he thinks that, okay, you doubted me, and so we'll go this way. And so I think that you can see that he has a chance to be a factor this year. I would nominate him. I think, you know, I don't know how you want to categorize Trey Flowers. And right now it's hard to figure out exactly playing time for Trey Flowers. But I think that after last season, I don't know if you want to say he broke out in his rookie year. He broke down a little bit in year two. But I think that, you know, he can come in and do some more things. And so, you know, you start to look at some of those guys like that and see, okay, who can make the biggest advancement. If he gets the chance to go on the field, I think John Ursua, And I don't know if he's going to get a chance to get on the field too much because, again, Tyler Lockett's one of the best slot receivers in football. So those are some of the guys that I'm thinking. I don't know, Curtis Rogers, who do you think would be some of the nominations to be in that category of a breakout player?
I hope it's L.J. Collier. For the sake of the defensive line, they're going to need somebody to step up in addition to what they already have in Benson Mayoa and Bruce Irvin. And, you know, we saw, I think, Pro Football Focus had the Seahawks ranked at 32nd on the defensive line. That's where they need somebody to break out, whether it be L.J. Collier, maybe Daryl Taylor when he comes back and is healthy, because we saw him get placed on the non-football injury list yesterday. I think L.J. Collier is somebody that the Seahawks absolutely need to have break out. I don't know if the need for Will Dissly to break out is going to be as much as it will be for somebody on the defensive line because of how deep the Seahawks tight end room is. You've got Greg Olsen, Jacob Hollister, Luke Wilson, and when Colby Parkinson comes back, you'll have him too in addition to Will Dissly. I think anything that Will Dissly gives you will be a positive beyond, you know, about four games, because he's only played, I think, 8 career games over 2 seasons. Anything he gives you beyond that is just going to be icing on the cake as far as I'm concerned. I think the Seahawks absolutely need somebody on that defensive line, though, John, to step up. And maybe on the offensive line, too, because there's so many interchangeable parts from last year. Dwayne Brown, really the only returning starter. I mean, obviously, Mike Iupati is back, but he's near the end of his career. He's not somebody that's going to go to another level. But maybe somebody on that right side of the offensive line, too, could stand to have a breakout season.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, then you know, you saw that, you know, you can't put DK Metcalf in the category because he broke out last year to a point where the NFL Network voters of players voted him as the 81st best player in football. And I thought that was a great accomplishment for him and one that shows that he's, you know, on the rise right now. I mean, I don't know how much time Jacob Hollister is going to be able to get on the field. I would say, you know, breakout now could be B.J. Finney, because Finney, you know, comes over from the Pittsburgh Steelers. But when he was in Pittsburgh, he was a real valuable guard center fill-in. And, of course, what he did was, you know, he didn't get the full time to start. Now, at center, he may be the one to get the full-time chance to start. Now, if he doesn't start at center and maybe starts at guard, then I think, you know, one of the candidates could end up being Ethan Posick, because Ethan Posick's probably better at center than he is in some of the other positions. So I think that could be, you know, one of the considerations to go.
Yeah, and there's going to be so many competitions, especially on that offensive line, you know, especially at that center spot. No more Justin Britt. He was a staple of that offensive line for the better part of a decade now. There's going to be competition. Finney, Posick, maybe Joey Hunt if the Seahawks choose to re-sign him. It's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of eyes on that spot on the offensive line. John, when you look at the young guys who are sort of in a position to maybe break out, how do you think the abnormality of this year's training camp, how do you think that will impact some of those guys who maybe, you know, a lot may be expected of them, but because there's just not a whole lot of opportunity to be around each other, could see, you know, maybe some crazy scenarios here?
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, everything's up for grabs, because I still remember going back to 2011, the last time there wasn't an off-season program. You know, quarterbacks like Colt McCoy talked about, you know, how not having an off-season program, you know, set him back maybe a year or two, because he was just a first-year starter back then, and you know, really never lived up to any of the you know, hype that he had. And so it is going to affect it. But I think for the most part, you know, I think it's going to affect quarterbacks, you know, wide receivers, you know, certainly I think maybe some linebackers, defensive backs, particularly cornerbacks, you know, where this team is still in pretty good shape, because again, they've got so much experience. You know, they do have, you know, 3 experienced linebackers that go all the way back into the Super Bowl days, you know, because you have Bruce Irvin, you have KJ Wright, I mean, you have Bobby Wagner, so they're covered there, and they're just trying to develop 2 young guys that will eventually be the starters on the outside in, you know, Jordan Brooks, and also, you know, in the ability to get, you know, Cody Barton on the field. But I think right now this team is pretty well set up to have a lot of good things happen to it. Now it's just a matter of getting on the pads and all that stuff and getting through the tests and see who's healthy or not. But boy, that was a big thing yesterday when they found out that they definitely are going to have Will Dissly available all through training camp to try to see what he can do. Hey, Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Well, coming up next, and of course, we got a big treat coming up at 11:30, because we're going to talk to Keyshawn Johnson, who's now on the morning show, basically with Keyshawn, Jay, and Zubin. That's going to be on from 3 to 6 on ESPN Radio, and of course, 710 ESPN Radio. We're going to talk to Keyshawn at 11:30. But coming up next, Brandon Gustafson from 710sports.com. We'll talk some Mariners next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us is Brandon Gustafson from 710sports.com. And so, Brandon, of course, it just seems that the starting pitching, for the most part, it was pretty good at the beginning of the game. But some of the pitchers, particularly like a Justin Sheffield, once he starts to get the second time around the rotation, starts to have problems. He was going great with four shutout innings to get going, and then gets four runs given up in the fifth. Brian Smith, who really has struggled since signing with the team at the beginning of the season, he gave up four more runs, and the bullpen right now is struggling. And kind of sum up the way this season is start, Brian, for pitching.
Yeah, seems like at the start, some of the starting pitchers have actually done a pretty good job that first go around in the order. Getting through the second time has been a little bit of a struggle, and we kind of expected that the first turn and the second time through the starting rotation has seemed to be pretty good. I thought Sheffield actually threw the ball really well those first four innings. The fifth inning got away from him a little bit. The control wasn't quite there, but he still made some pretty good pitches. Laureano, the center fielder for Oakland, just kind of beat him the other way. They had a little bit of a shift on him, but the bullpen was going to be seen as kind of a weakness going into this year, and we've seen that. And something that they just can't get past is that big inning. And every loss, it seems like there's just that one inning that really gets away from them, where it's whether it's errors or walks or just a combination of a little bit of everything. We kind of saw that yesterday again when Oakland exploded in that fifth inning.
Yeah, it really does, Brandon, because again, what's it just seems like it's either the fourth inning or the fifth inning. It looked to be cured, at least at the top of the rotation, because Marco Gonzalez seems to have conquered it. I think you can see some other guys have been able to conquer it, which was encouraging. But Sheffield still has some more work to do. And I don't know what's going on with Brian Smith, because again, he is, I think, one of the most experienced relievers, if not the most experienced reliever on that staff. And right now he's really been pummeled.
Yeah, Brian Shaw is having a little bit of a rough go so far, and he was really, really good for Cleveland for about 3 or 4 years, and he signed a big deal with the Rockies, and most pitchers tend to struggle in Colorado, just the high altitude. They get hit around pretty big, and that was part of the reason why he ended up getting released, as well as he had a pretty high salary number, but just doesn't seem like he's quite right. His pitches don't look like they're quite getting where they need to go. You see a lot of catchers setting up inside balls outside. He had a really bad pitch where they're set up kind of low and away. He just threw it over the top of Austin Dole, the catcher's head. It's going to be interesting to see how much longer they're willing to give him a chance.
Yeah, no doubt. On the positive side, though, over the weekend, really good performances by Taijuan Walker and Yusei Kikuchi, and that has to be encouraging because, again, they were able to get past the fifth inning, get to the sixth, and really do some good pitching.
Yeah, those two were just dominant. They were both pounding the zone, and for Kikuchi, that's the best that we've seen him here since he threw that complete game shutout in Toronto last year. He had everything working. He was mixing in that cutter, the slider, and the velocity was up. And for Taijuan, that had to be ecstatic for him. That was the deepest he's gone in a game in 3+ years or so. It's a good thing. And hopefully those guys can get deeper into ball games, especially since we've seen those middle innings, those relievers have struggled a bit.
Yeah, back to the bullpen. Who has looked good, if anybody has looked good in the bullpen so far?
I've really liked Anthony Misevich, the lefty. He gave up the home run the other day, but before that, he looked pretty good. Kind of low mid-90s fastball, pretty good breaking ball. Taylor Williams, who's a local guy, right-hander, he was the guy who picked up that first save in Houston. another guy, hard throwing, right hander, pretty good breaking ball. They're the two guys that have kind of stood out to me a little. But like you said, John, it's been a little rough so far, and they have so many young prospect relievers down with the taxi squad in Tacoma. It's going to be interesting to see when those guys get their first shot.
Yeah, no doubt. Obviously, Kyle Lewis has been the star of the team so far. Can he sustain what he's been doing?
You sure hope so, but it's historic kind of how he's been doing it. Yesterday was the first time that he hasn't got on base or gotten a hit this season. Something that's really encouraging has to be seeing him go the other way a lot of times, especially with younger power hitters. They're just trying to pull the ball. You can't really put a shift on him because it seems like if he's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark, he's spraying base hits to right field. So that's got to be really encouraging. Everybody kind of knew the strikeout numbers would be up because he's more of a power hitter and also because he lets the ball travel so far in order for him to hit the ball the other way. But the thing that's really encouraging to me also is just how he looks physically, because coming off of some really nasty knee injuries while he was in the minor leagues, it was thought he was probably going to have to move to corner outfield, but he's been holding down the fort in center field. And other than a misplayed ball, I think it was on Sunday or Monday, he's looked pretty comfortable out there.
Evan White started the season well. He had a great summer camp, great fielder and all that stuff, but he's in a little bit of a cold streak. What seems to be going on with him?
I mean, he's facing the best pitching that he's seen, and he never had an at-bat above AA before this year. And the only guys that he'd seen who were pitching at the major league level were those guys that are on his team in camp. And he had a really tough go at the start because you're facing Houston, who has multi-time Cy Young winner, and Justin Verlander. He also had to face off against Zach Greinke. So it's going to be tough. Looks like maybe his timing isn't quite right. Yesterday it seemed like he was maybe pressing a little bit. Seems like he knows that he's struggling a little bit at the plate, but he's still been hitting the ball pretty hard, and some of it's just bad luck. At some point, those line drives are going to end up falling for base hits.
Yeah, no question about it. When you look at the three teams that they've played so far, how do you kind of evaluate, you know, both the Astros and, well, actually, just the Astros and the A's so far? And, you know, they got the Angels coming to town now, but how do you kind of evaluate what you see? They haven't played the Rangers yet, but how do you see the A's and the Astros just looking at them?
Yeah, I think that the Astros have a better lineup overall, though, and some of their better hitters like Altuve and Bregman, they've really been struggling from the get-go. George Springer is another guy. I think that the A's have a better pitching staff overall because I think their bullpen's better and more proven. But the A's showed in a few of those games against Seattle, when they didn't have the bats going, they had the arms to pick it up. And I don't know if Houston really has that. And Verlander having that injury, whether he's out for the whole season or not, that's a huge blow for them. I had already thought that the A's were going to win the division going into the year. That was my initial thought, and it kind of looks that way going forward.
Yeah, but it's also interesting that Shohei Ohtani is having some problems, I mean, with injuries, and I guess they're checking out to see how bad that is on the pitching side of it.
Yeah, I was really concerned when I saw his first start, not only him not getting an out, but that his velocity was like 91 to 92 to 93, because that he's a guy that when he was healthy his rookie year in 2018, he was consistently high 90s. He was touching 100 miles an hour. It seemed like the velocity was up a little bit in that second start, but I mean, he walked like five guys. I don't know if he even got out of the first inning again. So that's really concerning for the Angels, and I would assume that short season, and because he's coming off of Tommy John still, you would just shut him down. It remains to be seen how that impacts him at the plate, because as we saw during the series with the Mariners, he can put the ball out of the ballpark with ease on some really tough pitches. So just because he's such a fun player to watch, you hope that it's nothing too serious and he can get out and be a two-way guy like he was his rookie year.
Yeah, some early thoughts on the Angels coming to town and what kind of team they have?
Yeah, the lineup's really good, and especially with Ohtani being down, the pitching's not that great, and we saw that during the series the other day. It's going to be interesting to see how the Mariners' starting pitching does going forward. We're going to be getting into the third turn of the rotation. Justin Dunn, I thought, looked pretty good in his first start, which was against the Angels, but an error on a Mike Trout ground ball, and then he walked Anthony Rendon and Shohei Ohtani, who we were just talking about, golfed a ball that was barely a foot off of the ground over 400 feet into right field. I think that the pitching for the Mariners is going to be something to watch very close for, but Mike Trout, who had the last few days off because of the birth of his child, he's going to be back in the lineup, but looks like no Ohtani, so you still got to deal with Trout, though.
Yeah, no doubt. Any update on Graveman as far as how he is with the neck?
I haven't seen or read anything on that so far. I'm not sure if because it sounds like it's something that's been bugging him for a while now. I don't know if that's something where they would bring somebody up from the taxi squad or if they might go with a bullpen day. I don't know if they would even go as far as to bring up Logan Gilbert because it might just be a one-start thing. You hope that he's okay because he's looked pretty sharp, and even that last game was just his pitch count got a little high. He just wasn't quite as fine-tuned as you might have hoped, but that first game, the first few innings, the velocity was up. We saw some really good stuff out of him.
Brandon Gustafson, what do you have on 710sports.com?
Oh, we're just working on some Seahawks stuff with training camp kicking off. We're going to have some good columns here from good old Jim Moore, hopefully one coming up in the next few hours.
And, of course, he's celebrating Gardner Minshew coming off the COVID list, so I'm sure he might reference that. Hey, Brandon, thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet. All parties in the Moore household right now.
There you go. No question. Hey, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we are going to go behind the lines and catch you up to date on the National Football League. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, it was a big day yesterday because they finally completed the final language for the collective bargaining agreement adjustments because of COVID-19. And they figured out all the language on the opt-outs. I'm sure Devin McCourty's all upset now because Devin McCourty was saying, I can't believe, he's, of course, the safety for the New England Patriots. He's like, the NFL's trying to screw us guys. They're trying to debate whether to opt out or not, and they're trying to move the deadline up. And, of course, what McCourty's not realizing, the deadline was supposed to be August 1st, but the way that the language of the deal is supposed to be is that 7 days after you get it done, and, of course, they got it done yesterday, that's what it's going to be. So that should have pushed it to next week, next Monday, but now the league and the players agreed to have the opt-outs done by 1 p.m. on Thursday. We're at 48 opt-outs right now, and that list is still going to continue to grow. I mean, defensive tackles, there's been 9 defensive tackles, 3 of those guys of starters. You know, a big one yesterday in Juwan James, the right tackle for the Denver Broncos. You know, he opted out, and, you know, we'll see who else, but I don't know, Curtis. It's like, you know, the players finally, you know, get this deal done. They know what the parameters are right now for protocol. They know what the penalties are if you misbehave and bring a virus back and do some things, because they now know you can be fined. And there's such limitations to what they can do, although they opened it up a little bit because, you know, it was basically said, hey, you can't attend a sporting event. You know, you can't attend a concert. Well, now what it comes down to is that you can, like, for example, Patrick Mahomes now can go to the baseball team he just bought into with ownership. And as long as he's sitting in a separate box away from the crowd, no more than 10 people in the box, then he can go attend the game of the team that he just bought into. But, you know, they do have fines, and it keeps going up with each violation that you have. I mean, if you're going to be in the hotel, they can trace you and make sure that you don't go out and do anything. If you go into a bar, I mean, there can be no more than 10 people in that bar, and they all have to be wearing face masks and everything else. And so I think this is a little bit more organized, although you never know, there's going to be some falls through the cracks and all that stuff, but a little bit more organized than what we see in baseball.
Yeah, baseball just kind of letting everybody fend for themselves, and as we've seen in St. Louis and Miami, that's just not going to be feasible if you want to have a season without interruption. John, the Thursday deadline, 4 p.m. Eastern time, so 1 p.m. Pacific. We've seen in baseball, though, players have opted out during the season. Lorenzo Cain of the Milwaukee Brewers, I think he opted out just the other day. Does the NFL, will they allow for players to opt out during the season, but would it be without this stipend that's given to players who are opting out beforehand?
Yeah, they loosened up on that one because it was going to be, hey, if you don't do it past the deadline, you can't opt out and get everything back. But what they did is that if you have a high-risk situation, if you have a family situation that is urgent, I mean, you can apply to have the opt-out and do that. And so I think that's the fair way to do it because certainly you know there's going to be problems. You know there's going to be some difficulties. And so they did adjust to that in trying to at least give the players a chance. If you do have a problem as the season goes on past the opt-out deadline, then you can do it and still get a stipend and move everything into next year. The one thing they also did is that, which is, I guess, good for this year, bad for next year, is that they took all the prorations that are, because again, you take the roster bonuses, you take the base salaries, you move that into next year, but now you take all the prorations for this year and you move it into next year. And of course, with $175 million cap and some $3-4 million prorations, boy, that's going to put a lot of teams in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Another surprise move yesterday, John, was the Jets cutting wide receiver Quincy Enunwa, who signed that four-year, $36 million extension with the Jets in late 2018. He was expected to be a big target for Sam Darnold through the first couple of years of his career. That really hasn't, come to fruition. So Quincy Enunwa, is there a market for him, or is he, somebody that his injuries are going to cause a lot of red flags?
He's done. I mean, they realized when they put him on the injured list with the neck injury and wiped him out for the season that he was never going to play again. And so it would be a big upset to see if he does play. I don't see that happening. So it looks like he is done for the year and done for his career. But boy, you talk about doing a bad contract, because he was guaranteed $6 million base this year, which he's going to collect. And then on an injury guarantee next year, they have to pay him $4.1 million on a base guarantee of some of his base salary. So now they're taking a $10.1 million hit on him and not getting his services. So I know they have plenty of cap room. That's not a big issue, but that had to hurt.
Well, shout out to his agent for negotiating that contract. Yeah. Great job by him. John, also we saw yesterday Minnesota Vikings, they are extending Mike Zimmer and also now GM Rick Spielman, who I don't think there were any details on the length of the contract extension they gave Rick Spielman, but how would you grade the job he has done in Minnesota since taking over?
I think very well, because, even though the quarterback hasn't been able to take them over the top, Kirk Cousins or Teddy Bridgewater before that, I mean, he's got that team talent-wise to be in the playoffs. Ironically, it's like every other year, because they had that, Mike Zimmer does such a great job with the defense. I mean, sometimes he can be a little bit overbearing on his coaching staff and all that stuff, but Rick, is very creative in what he does. I mean, remember, he was one of the first guys that was trading into the first round, to get maybe 2-3 first round picks, and because they would have the fifth year option. But now, as John Snyder and other people have proven, I mean, you're not going to get a Pro Bowl player to use a fifth year option for the most part in the at that point in the draft, 21 to 32. So he's made adjustments. I mean, this year they hit that 3-year cycle where it's like, okay, all these contracts are coming big and they're gonna have to make some people go, so they had to let five starters on defense go. Stephon Diggs was a pain, so they ended up trading him, but they got a whole bunch of draft choices, 15 this year, which was good. They were able to get like 10 next year, and so unfortunately the only big signing they had was Michael Pierce at 3 years, $27 million, a defensive tackle to replace Linville Joseph, but he opted out, and so they just had to make a trade yesterday to get somebody to be able to go ahead and try to be a seventh-round acquisition to play some defensive line. But, yeah, I mean, he's scrambling, but again, with the cap and all those different things and a high-paid quarterback like Kirk Cousins, you have to scramble around.
Absolutely, you do. Speaking of scrambling, John, the 49ers, we talked yesterday a lot about George Kittle and where those negotiations stand between the two sides. Do you make any sort of noise at all about them signing Jordan Reed, the former Washington tight end, who's been out of the league for, I think, a full season? He's dealt with some injuries in his career, but when he is healthy, he is a really good tight end. Mm-hmm. What do you make of San Francisco signing him when, I mean, all signs point to George Kittle coming back in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I know Mike Silver was saying it should maybe opt out this year, which would have been the stupidest thing in the world because his contract would toll and he would be making the same amount next year as this year and not become a free agent. So you know he wasn't going to hold out. You know he wasn't going to opt out or anything like that. But I think just depth. I mean, more than anything else, you get a Pro Bowl guy in there. And again, you're in a division right now where you can see Seattle ramping things up. Although, I guess, do you think that criticism of not being all in is gone right now after the Jamal Adams trade? Do you think that's all gone here in Seattle?
I think so. I think people are starting to see that the Seahawks team wants to compete and contend in 2020.
Yeah, and of course, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the 49ers, who had to put DJ Reed, a defensive tackle, down for the season with a torn pec, they're looking at Ziggy Ansah, who's now going through protocol checks, and Deion Jordan, the former Seahawk, two former Seahawks that are there. So stay tuned on that front. We'll also stay tuned. We're going to talk some inside the Seahawks with Stacy Rost, who's going to be coming up after the show, along with Tom, and it's going to be with Jake Heaps and all that stuff. At 11:30, we talked to Keyshawn Johnson, who's now debuting his new radio show in the morning. Here, you'll be able to hear it in the morning. But coming up next, Stacy Rost, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.